Hari Ho Sa. Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. 15. Suhota Swami, in his book Vedanta Psychology, explains how Vaishnavas and Mayavadis disagree on the conclusions to be drawn from this analysis. Sorry about that. About Sushupti, the tamasic state. Shankaracharya argues that the self becomes the witness of primeval avidya. But this act of witnessing avidya, the ahankara dissolves. By this act of witnessing avidya, ahankara dissolves. For Shankara, Sushupti is the threshold of pure consciousness, in that the self is freed from material perceptions and conceptions. Right? So then, you know, he's bringing out this aspect. Because the whole point is they're just trying to get rid of all the material things. And the only way you can do that is in deep sleep. Right? And on the transcendental platform, then that basically means that you have to be going back to that original point of being merging into the Lord. But since you can't, by Shankar's philosophy, there can't be a Lord to, you know, a person to merge into. So, you understand? So that he leaves these elements. Ramanuja holds that it is incorrect to speak of the soul being the witness to anything in the Sushupti state. Because how do you witness when you're in dreamless deep sleep? There's literally nothing, no thing, to be seen in Sushupti. Right? There's nothing there. That's what it means. You know, and then the other thing is, how do you witness avidya? What would you witness with? Because then an ahankara would dissolve, but the point is it's due to avidya that you develop the ahankara that I'm the jiva.
Yeah.
So how, by seeing it, it'll make it go away?
Yeah.
You know, because its very existence means that you have that.
Yeah.
So you'd have to see the dissolving of avidya to get that effect.
Yeah.
But then the point is then you can't see it or witness it, because to witness, then there must be individuality and there must be senses to perceive it.
Yes.
So, but it sounds great, because the point is they want to get to free from material perceptions and conceptions. That's the desire. So whatever you tell them, then they're going to agree. Just like a man wants to make a lot of money, you can come up and tell him all kinds of amazing schemes how he can get it, and he'll want to believe it. Yeah. Though technically, you ask anybody else, and they'll say, this doesn't sound right. You know? So that's the difficulty, is that you have these contradictions, because it's material desire that gives them the ability to be covered by this illusion and think that they're getting beyond illusion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is that the same thing that happens to us? It only due to material desires that we find ourselves in the situation that we are in, even though it may be an illusion?
On one level, yes, because it's like that by some material arrangement will actually become happy. then we want to believe that. So therefore, you know, oh, we can do this, we can do that. We think that that's what's going to make us happy. But it's only its connection to Krishna that will make us happy. You know, it's use in Krishna's service, the association of Vaishnavas. Does that make sense? It's not actually the facilities. Let's say you want to put together a nice party. So it's not because of the arrangements you made, it's the endeavor that you put in to please the Lord and the devotees. That's what makes it so nice. Because someone else can have the same facilities, but it's not attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's about the bhakti that goes in. So Krishna being pleased, you become pleased. Does that make sense? So, but because we're so used to this idea that the material will make me happy, that we can get distracted and think some material arrangements will make us very happy. You know, it's just like, oh, if I get this, then everything will work good and I'll do this and that. And you get it and nothing changes. You know, maybe 1 or 2 days and then back to normal. Because the point is, it's not the thing that causes the change. It's our consciousness that causes the change. Is that right? But, so, because they're, you know, that's more easy. They'll also agree to that. You know, because they're trying to get rid of this aspect of karma. But when it comes to gyan, that's what the illusion then catches them. Right? In other words, Maya's clever. Okay, you don't want to come under illusion this way, we got this other way. You know? So Yeah, no, she's good. You know, just as soon as she hears what it is that, you know, like that, you know, says, so, yeah, we got this, we got that. Oh, that's stupid. Oh, yeah. Well, if you're that guy, you know, you understand this is stupid, then we have this for you.
Much,
you know,
better.
Like, yeah. And then it's immediately, oh, yeah, of course, because I'm not stupid, you know. So, like that. So, Maya's good. It's not like a, you know, it's like, a, what do you call it?
It's not her first time.
Best.
Yes, she's the best salesman. You mean secondhand car salesman? I have nothing on her. It didn't dawn on, it's funny on this, because it was just so much part of the scene, I don't know about now, that it was about 2 years ago that I figured out, that's totally bogus. It was the thing, at least in the 60s, that the second-hand car salesman would say, you know, about the quality of the car, kick the tires, you know, you can see that it's good, yeah, it's firm, and what does kicking the tires got to do with anything? You know, like that. And it was just so common, it was so standard. You know, it only dawned on me 2 years ago that this is totally bogus. What is kicking a tire got to do with anything? You know, but they come up with these things to make you feel that you're part of it, you're doing something, and it's all happening, and they're good.
Yeah, I was thinking also that the jiva doesn't have to be to become one with Brahman to get into the state of deep sleep and still experiences Brahman.
Yeah.
So, and then comes back into the world.
It's going to happen anyway. Every time Mahavishnu breathes in,
yeah,
you're going to be in that state.
Big sleep and the small sleep.
Yeah. And then, or even every day of Brahma, every night of Brahma, it's the same thing.
Mm.
You know, it's because all the living entities are suspended in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they go to sleep. And so then that's happening. And also in Mahat, it's the same thing. Though it's, you know, how you say, the consciousness is there and everything like that, but it's still basically the same thing. There is no material involvement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to happen anyway. So the element of this karma, gyan, and this Buddhistic element of nothingness, you know, is going to happen anyway. These three states, that's why the living entity can relate to them so well.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what they've been doing since time immemorial, going through these three states, you know. And then, and every day, then you have the, you know, wakefulness, dreaming, and dreamless deep sleep. So these are, you know, what's always going through. So anything that you want, if you can relate it to these, then you'll think it's connected. You know, it's going to happen. Does that make sense? It's the authority.
Yeah.
You know, because by logic, you're not actually making the connections. But if there's something that you like or comfortable with, and there's something you want, and I show the connection in some way, even though there isn't one, I can just make it sound like there is, then you buy it. So that's the thing, is the Mayavadis have bought into this foolishness. You know? So they're thinking it's the Karmis that are, you know, foolish. But, you know, they're also foolish. It's just, you know, you have to be a little more sophisticated to trick them, that's all. But, you know, white walls. You know, like, yes.
Have you encountered anywhere that one destination of the Buddhists is that they're absorbed back into, you know, Mahavishnu's body during his sleep?
Means that's the state that they're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the only, I'm just mentioning like that.
Yeah.
Achyutananda mentioned that they get stuck into the Garbhodak mud. Because then it's dark, there's nothing happening. So, I mean, where he got that, I'm not sure, but that's what he said that's where Nirvana happens.
Who said?
Achyutananda.
In which body?
In nobody.
Nobody, you have to get stuck in.
No, but here is nobody, yeah. No thing. Nothing.
You have to get stuck in the mud with something.
No, you'd be that in your subtle body. Because as long as you're conditioned, you still have that subtle body. It stays with you, it doesn't go away. It just, you know, different states, it goes into dreamless deep sleep. Even in between, Prabhupada mentions that between bodies, that one was changing bodies, that there's, you know, for the materialist, there's a 9-month gap of deep sleep just so that you recover, so that you're ready for the next bout of birth, death, old age, and disease, you know, with
yeah.
enthusiasm. You know. Otherwise, you get too tired and worn down. Oh no, like that, and now you're fresh and ready to go.
Yeah, yeah. The state kind of sounds like solitary confinement.
Yeah, but you're asleep, so you don't know. Yeah. And then you know you don't have the problem with bad food because there isn't any, so it works out.
Yeah.
That's like bears hibernating.
Yeah, that's
the same thing. It's yeah, just too,
six
too
months,
depressing.
Just,
yeah. Yeah.
Just add 3 more months. That's all.
Yeah. So it works.
Yeah, it works. Yeah. So they can go on for another 6 months as bears and not shoot themselves.
Just go up to 100 and put the fork into the gun.
Yeah. Similarly, Ramanuja acknowledges the presence of the subject, the Jivatma, in Sushupti, but he does not acknowledge that the attribute of the subject, consciousness, is active at this time. We ought not to say, in Sushupti, consciousness is pure. Like Shankara says, after all, when we come out of deep sleep, we return to the wakeful engagements of trying to satisfy our material desires. Rather, we must say, consciousness is disengaged while in Sushupti. It does not operate between subject and object, and relation of subject and object, which are the three bases of cognition. Because the whole point is they're saying you're going to witness.
Yes.
But Ramanuja's pointing out is if you're in Sushupti, you don't witness anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because the consciousness is disengaged. That's the whole point. So how can you say you'll witness?
Yes.
You know, because then you also have the element of subject and object, and somehow or another, this subject and object is going to dissolve your false ego, but any other subject and also object's not. But it's not like you're dealing subject and object of transcendence and the jiva. You're dealing with avidya, right? So pure ignorance in its primeval state. Witnessing that, then that will bring you to the topmost place. You know, there's got to be something wrong here. Right? That's why it said that he tricked, you know, the Buddhists. It's not that he's offered anything better. Right?
Yes.
I guess the difference is in the one you're in the mud, and the other they have a night light on. Right? You know, so that's the difference, right? You know, so that's okay, that 16 wasn't part of this, right? Oh, we already did that, right? Okay. Oh, 72,000 subtle nerves.
Yeah, we did.
Why? They all come. They all join at the heart. Puri tat. That's far out.
The Tweety bird.
Yeah, yeah. Puri tat. Puri tat. No, you didn't, because you did. Because you're not conscious. Yeah, right. You can't see the pudita.
It's a weird cartoon.
Yeah, no, that would be a weird twist on it. So. Consciousness may be disengaged during Sushupti, yet consciousness is never subject from, separate from the subject. In this way, the subject and his consciousness are non-dual, Advaita. Vedanta Psychology 100. Okay, so it's disengaged, means it's not connecting, so you're not going to be able to understand subject and object, but subject still remains. It's not that by disengagement that now the soul isn't there anymore. Because that's your idea. When you get rid of this identity like that, you get rid of the soul. But Ramanuja is pointing out, no, the soul still remains. Mm-hmm. All it is because how can it do that? Because just as impossible that in that state of Sushupti you could perceive, it's also just as much that the soul doesn't go away. It's just consciousness becomes disengaged. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't prove that the jiva is therefore coming from illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes. From the Buddhist comes another objection to the existence of the soul in deep sleep. When there is no experience of the senses or the mind, why not assume that only the void remains during deep sleep? In this effect, they say there is death every time one enters deep sleep. Jiva Goswami attends to this next. So basically Buddhists are suicidal.
Yeah. Seems to be
every night, yeah. Every moment. Yeah. Oh, it's getting late. I think I'm going to go kill myself. Yeah,
knock yourself out.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, it's just that this friend said, Yeah, you go to sleep. I'm going to go kill myself down at this guy. Down at the bar, right? So, everybody has that
preferred method.
Yeah.
Tell the guy who wakes up in the morning that there's breakfast in the
Yeah, that is the only problem you tell. Yeah. Friend comes back always the same. You'd think death would have some effect, right? Why he's not in the morning, a little different.
The guy down at the bar, there is some effect.
Right? Yeah, no, that there's definitely some effect. 54.3, but if everything dissolves, including the ego, nothing remains. How then is the soul still in its steady position? In answer, it is said, we have remembrance of this. Tat anusmriti, smritir, naha. As awake observers, we remember the indivisible soul, the witness of deep sleep. I slept comfortably for so long and wasn't aware of anything. Footnote 17. Right, so he's pointing out that he was in this state. So then who could be observing? Because the mind, the intelligence, the ego, none of them are functioning. So who's left as the observer? Mm-hmm. Right, the soul, because it's not the body. Right, the body's not, the senses aren't, because they're managed, the body and senses are managed by the mind, intelligence, and ego. So that means it has to be beyond that, so the soul. Footnote 17. The happiness experienced in Sushupti comes from contact with the Supreme. This is shown as Shruti. Pragya nenatmana samparishtvakto na bhayam kinchana veda. Nan taram. Embraced by the omniscient supersoul, he has no knowledge of anything, eternal, external, or internal. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.3.21. So embraced by the omniscient supersoul, so the living entity basically goes back into the Lord. Right? And so then that's where he's deeply asleep. Right? He's not aware of anything. Then when he wakes up, comes to his consciousness again, then he starts, observing the world again through his senses, his mind, his ego. In deep sleep, the soul is said to perceive a kind, mild, temporary version of Brahmananda, the bliss known after liberation from material bondage. Free from all material mental states of happiness and distress, desire and hatred, he unconsciously perceives his own blissful self in the presence of his constant companion, the heart, the supersoul. Nonetheless, because he still has desires for material enjoyment, the soul must leave this state and awake again. But by this daily bathing in his natural happiness, he receives the rest he needs to endure the onslaught of material life. Otherwise, it'd be tough. Right? Therefore, since nothing can be remembered if not experienced before, the soul had such an experience in deep sleep, although because the soul was then out of contact with sense objects, the experience was indistinct. Srila Baladeva Vibhushan explains his statement. When in deep sleep, with the senses and ahankara, ahami, merge, shane, in the Atma remains unchanged, kutastha. Absence of upadis means that they have been dissolved. However, liberation does not take place in deep sleep because of the existence of very subtle impressions. When the material ahankara dissolves, the sense of I related to the surupa, the jiva, remains. Because of the combination with ahankara, which appears when rising from sleep, one thinks, I slept happily in the waking state. The Atma is merely conscious during deep sleep. The person does not remember because he does not have experience of objects. Memory and experience are equated, therefore, Atma experiences this. Okay, we're on the page. We finished the footnote. The statement, I slept happily and did not know anything, shows that the perceiver of the experience and the one having the recollection must be the same person, since there cannot be any recollection without experience. This proves that the happiness was experienced by the same person who recalls it upon awakening, even though the recollection is hazy due to having no link with the mind of senses. Right? So, in other words, there's the understanding that it's there, but it's not so clear as having with the senses one has seen a sense object. Does that make sense? So that's why you just know. This is what's called paroksha, aparoksha. It hasn't been heard from anywhere. It's being, you know, directly experienced, but not through the senses. Right? It's just an experience. So that means the soul is experiencing that, but it's connected to the environment, but at the same time, it's not the sensual perception of the environment. It's the experience of it. Does that make sense? That's the difference. Pratyaksha means you sensually perceive it. Paroksha means you hear about someone else's sensually perceiving it. You know, or you've heard from others as an authority. Aparoksha means like this, you perceive it, but it's not coming from the senses. Right? Like sleep, you can perceive it. In other words, you experience it as long as you're not focusing on. As soon as you're focusing on it, means, in other words, if you can focus on that I slept well, you're not asleep, so you're not experiencing it anymore.
Right.
You know? Does that make sense? Just like you're doing something, as long as you're just doing it, you're experiencing it. So it works very nicely. As soon as you stop to perceive it directly, then you're not actually experiencing it anymore. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about it as a past thing.
So that's why people who talk so much never get anything done.
Yes. They got nothing done or they don't experience anything. Like the person, let's say he's in the kirtan, absorbing the kirtan, he gets up. Someone's talking about, wow, isn't this a great kirtan or this and that, and they're going on talking about it like that. So they're not actually experiencing it. They did for a moment, and they're talking about that moment. And that moment was quite nice, and they're going talking to the rest of the kirtan. But they could also experience the whole kirtan, and then it would be, you know, sorry.
Same with taking pictures of the deities doing Mangala Arati.
Yes, yes.
That one.
Yeah, yeah. And it's always for everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but what about the ones that
they're
are
never there?
The idea is that although there is no false ego during deep sleep, the real ego of the self remains. This is the true and inseparable identity of the self. So now it's because before it was all the material dissolve, right? But then the point is that to perceive it, then that means the who's perceiving and who's remembering are the two the same. Because you perceived it at the time, but now being awake, you remember it. You understand? You're trying to point out the two the same. Otherwise, then they'll try to separate those two. Right? And now he's putting in is that there is identity. Otherwise, how do you know that I, experienced it?
Mm.
Right? So there must be the element that there's real ego, not false ego. So yes, false ego is dissolved, but real ego remains. You know? Yes.
When you have like a Brahman realization, is it the senses who experience it?
No. It's the directly the soul. Like that. Because that's what's beyond. Nothing that you can experience with the senses will compare to that spiritual realization. That's beyond the senses. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, if you see something with the senses, like the deity, and he's very beautiful, it's not the senses. It's not the sensual experience that's giving you that feeling. It's Krishna himself. His transcendental potency is coming through the medium of the senses. You're experiencing it.
Same, like in Kirtan.
Yes, it's the same. All of it is like that. In other words, we're using the medium of the senses, but it's not about the senses like that. It's about the potency, the Lord in his potency that's coming through the senses. You know, so it's like you have wire, but the wire is not electricity, but it can carry electricity. Like that. So the senses can carry the Lord's mercy, right? If he reveals himself. Does that make sense? Okay. The real ego of the self remains. This is the true and inseparable identity of the self. So there's no question of voidness in the deep sleep state, as the Buddhists claim. Because they're trying to say is that it goes into void, there is nothing. It all just disappears. Right? But then the point is if it all disappears, then you're going to have the problem is how do you remember it? Because if there's nothing there, there's nothing to remember.
Yeah.
And if there's nothing there, you're not there to perceive that there was something that you could remember. So that's why he has to point out the two. Because otherwise they'll say there's you now as an individual, but when you were deep sleep, then it was void. So there is no perception, there is nothing. Mm. But then how can you remember it?
Yes.
You know, and how can you perceive that it was there? So both elements have to remain intact and both are the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that means then there has to be an original identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for it to work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nor of mere consciousness without individuality is the Mayavadi's claim. Right? Because they're saying, oh, consciousness is there, but then you're not there. Right, because if the false ego goes, then there is there's no identity of the soul. But then, how would you remember it? Because if there's nothing, if you're not there, you can't do it. And if nothing's there, then you can't perceive it. But you're remembering it and perceiving it, so both aspects must be there. Does that make sense?
I always found it funny those who say they want to experience oneness, because who's experiencing?
Yeah, who's experiencing? Because, you know, yeah, if you're one, then how do you... Because the point is it's two as one. You know what I'm saying? If you have a good friend and the bond is very good, or you're thinking in exactly the same way or feeling the same experience, that has taste. It's two as one. That has taste.
Yeah.
But one as one, it's like...
One heart.
Huh?
One heart.
One heart. One heart. Yeah, very quiet.
Oneness.
Yes.
Like falling.
I remember
on the
who.
Floor. It's falling on the temple floor.
Okay. I'm not sure. It wasn't a Chuttananda also. You know, he says, you know, about one hand clapping. You know? And I think he says, I'll show you one hand clapping. And it goes up, whack. That's one hand clapping. And it just completely, it's just, you know. What do you do?
What do you do? Move on.
The silence that they're talking about, is it just mental peace?
Basically, that's what they're looking for. But the point is that silence, how will you appreciate it if you're not there? You know, that's like sitting around and talking about how, you know, at nighttime, you know, in the winter in the Grand Canyon, it's so peaceful. But they've never experienced it. They're not there. You know, it's like, you know, what does it mean? You know, so it's just, it doesn't. Because the point is, it's the individual who's desiring the peace. But if you're not an individual, why do you need peace? You know, so, yeah.
What's the desire if not an individual?
Anyway? Yeah, no, it just doesn't make sense. Because they're saying, well, it's the identity that caused the problem. No, it's the illusion about the real identity that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. So they're getting very close, but then they're missing.
Far.
Yeah, but they're very far away. The happiness experienced in Sushupti presents no conflict for Vaishnavas, and also highlights the importance of the Ananda aspect of the Jiva's nature. Because you appreciate, because that was happy. Right? The experience of pleasure in deep sleep demonstrates that the affective side of consciousness, feeling, does not shut down even when the cognitive, thinking, and conative, willing sides are disengaged. The plain conclusion is that the affected side is superior. Affective. What do you mean by the affective?
Affective means like the emotional or pleasure.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, so that's superior because you're still able to appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Right? Because now the cognitive and the conative are not functioning.
Yeah.
Right? So there's no thinking and there's no willing. Mm-hmm. But the feeling still remains. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of like out of the Satchitananda.
Yeah, because feeling is in Ananda.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Sat means thinking is in the Sambandha. Mm-hmm. Right? Feeling is Ananda. Willing is in the Abhideya.
Yes.
Right? Ananda or Prayojan.
Yeah.
Right? So the Prayojan is superior because that remains even if the other two stop.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And also the point is that the Mayavadis, they deny that there's that kind of affective side, the feeling side, in that, you know, ultimate absolute state.
But if it's not, then what do they care?
Yeah, exactly.
that's the point. Yeah. Why are they so worried about it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But what to do? They are worried. For Mayavadis, however, this kind of pleasure undermines their philosophy. For Shankaracharya and his followers, happiness demands a distinction. Happiness demands a distinction, the experiencer between the experiencer of pleasure and the pleasure itself. If, as they claim, the individual ego dissolved into sleep, there would be no one left to remember it upon awakening.
Yes.
Okay. But the point is if it dissolves, then there's neither anything to experience, nor is there anyone there to experience it.
Why are they worried about that?
Because, see, as they have this the philosophy that I'm going to be eternally happy by getting rid of the material problems.
In deep sleep?
No, whatever it is, means because the question comes up is so one can give the example, just as in deep sleep. So this is their argument against it. But it still stands. So that's all that's there. It's that it's in their ideas that I'm going to be happy by getting rid of all material conceptions. And so, on one sense, they're correct up to the point of liberation. But at the point of liberation, then they think everything disappears. Right? But then if everything disappears, then what is the whole point anyway? Right? So the Vaishnava says, up to that point, then technically we're saying the same thing. Because all these aberrations in the philosophy are coming, what happens at that point? Right? But up to that point, how the material world is illusion and this and that, it's the same thing. Like that. So then when you get to that liberated state, then there's still the ego of the soul remains. But now, its natural position is as servant of the Lord. And as servant of the Lord, then that's going to make it work. Right? Then they can progress forward. So it's not that the identity or the experience is lost. So actually only devotees can actually experience Brahmananda. Those who claim to be into Brahmananda, Nirvana, actually technically can't experience it. The thing is, unless there's really a movement of the mosquitoes, if you go up, throw it up, because smoke, as it cools, it gets heavier and comes down anyway. Like that? You know what I'm saying? But if there's a whole bunch of mosquitoes there and you see somebody hopping around, then you show to send it in that direction. But you know, so don't do it as a regular thing.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So it's just that they have this idea, I want to be happy by getting rid of the material and experience. And which is not in its own a bad concept. But it can only be achieved in connection with our real relationship with the Lord. The reason that this one is a problem is because it's illusory. Right? Is that we have the mind, in other words, we have desires, we have intelligence, we have identity, we have endeavors, senses, you know, facility, but we think that's us. That's an illusion. So the thing is the natural state is these things are then defined in relationship with the Lord. That's real. Because the problem is not that the energy doesn't exist. The problem is that what we think the energy is doesn't exist. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point. You know, it's just like, yeah, here, see, I'm going to take this money, I'm going to go out and enjoy myself. And then the other person says, that's a piece of paper. And he says, no, but it's money. You know, so it means because others are an illusion, it'll work. But it's just a piece of paper. How's a piece of paper going to make you happy? You know, like that. You know, if people accepted plain sheets of, you know, A4 paper as money, then, you know, be great. You know, go out with your ream of paper and, you know, like that. Be good, no?
You need to buy a lot of it.
Not a lot of trees left.
Yeah. How much will that be? 10 reed. Ideal. Let me just pack my pickup truck.
May happen sooner than
later. Yeah, no, I'm just thinking. Yeah, you know, so one of those cartoons is, you know. You know, when publishers rule the world. 54.4. We can conclude, therefore, that the soul, although pure awareness, is itself an object of its own awareness, just as luminous bodies like the sun are objects revealed by their own light. Shruti therefore says, it is true that he, the soul during deep sleep, does not see, or rather that although seeing, he does not see externally visible objects. To remove the seer's vision altogether is impossible.
What about near-death experiences?
What's that got to do with reality?
The soul doesn't see during sleep.
Yeah, but near death is you're not talking about sleep. People seem to be quite aware during these near death experiences.
No, but you are in sleep when you are in life. If you are in.
But what do you mean by this? you know.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
You don't see with the external senses, but you can see.
So you don't see the car in front of you approaching at great speed the front of your car. What do you mean?
No, but on the operation table, when somebody's operating.
That's what I'm saying. What do you mean? You have to give a very specific example. Because I've heard one devotee talking about, you know, he's there and he saw the accident, he saw himself there, the car and everything, and, you know, he's just floating around out and watching that, and he's kind of going away. It's like that.
That's out-of-body experience. Oh, okay. It's different.
Okay, that's
what I mean. Yeah, so it's like that. Yeah, because near death means it's not death, so therefore you can't compare it to deep sleep.
So
it's out-of-body. It just means that you're in the subtle body. You know, because you're seeing the senses, sense of, you're seeing all these different things. It's just you're using the subtle body. But here we're talking about you're not using the subtle body, it's the soul himself, you know, being aware, consciousness himself, is able to observe himself. You're aware of yourself as your consciousness. Does that make sense? So it's different. Okay. This is the third argument, which proceeds from the distinction between the witness and the witnessed. Right? Because otherwise they're trying to separate these things and get rid of one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So both of that, and then he's saying that this is going to then proceeds from that. So it's true. He does not see, but what he does not see is the material,
yes.
The material senses. But as the soul, he sees.
Yes.
That you can't remove.
Yes.
To remove the seer's vision altogether is impossible. So that means there's always going to be a seer.
Yes.
So the oneness of the soul, and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, one of the main Upanishads.
Mm.
So you can't get rid of the soul and his perceiving.
Yes.
Right? So that means the soul is eternal.
Yes. Which is good.
Yes.
Don't we say that the seer is the Lord?
Oh, it means the ultimate seer is the Lord, the supreme seer. But in here, we're just discussing the soul. So he's a minute seer. He's, you know, sees very small. Right? So he's able to perceive the 1/10,000th, the tip of the hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but other than that, then not so much. He doesn't perceive other souls. But the soul, the supreme Lord, he perceives all the souls.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that's the difference. You know, we see within our limited capacity, and he sees all of the unlimitedly all the limited capacities.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? In other words, we're conscious of our own experience, but God is conscious of everybody's own experience.
And his own.
He means the super soul, he knows what's going on in everybody. In fact, he knows more of what's going on than you know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, your digestion's working and all that. We don't know how it works, but he does. You know, he's the creator of it. Right? He's Vaishrana. He's the fire of digestion, so he's actually digesting everything. You know, so it's all happening. Consciousness of the soul. Yes?
Others as small.
Means you see, but the point is you have limited experience of what they means. If you've experienced it or have an understanding of the principle, you can get some idea of what's going on. But that's just where you put your focus. But Krishna knows all of this at once. He knows all bodies at once. That's in the Gita. You understand? Because as super soul, he is in every body. So that means he knows what's going on in everybody. Not only that, he's in every atom, between every atom, so he knows what's happening everywhere. But we're limited to what it is we're able to perceive. That's all we can deal with. So we have consciousness, right? So the eternity, knowledge, and bliss we have, but in a you know, very minute form, right? But because that's the Satchitananda and Krishna Satchitananda, so that's common ground. You can have a relationship with Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Doesn't make sense. It makes sense. Okay. A fourth argument is implied by the distinction between being unhappy and being a reservoir as a static love. Okay, so then between the living entity and the Lord. The first argument is based on the witness and witnessed. During deep sleep, when the identification with the mind and senses is slackened, the soul witnesses his own self. Just as one does not need a flashlight to see the sun, the gross external senses are not needed to know the soul, for it is self-revealing. Right? Because it's not that the soul is one place and has to reveal the soul is the soul.
Yes.
So therefore, he can understand himself.
That's nice.
Right? Because we identify with the senses, therefore we're looking there. But it's as you pull everything back, then, you know,
become
bingo.
More
then you understand, you know, this is, it means I am that, meaning transcendence, not the body.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because otherwise we think I am this.
Yes.
But it's I am that, I am transcendence.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
This experience he recollects on awakening. This proves the changeless nature of the soul, because otherwise how does he remember it? It still has to be the same soul. And he remembers what was before the sleep. It's not like he wakes up and then the sleep was good and he can't remember what was before that. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Distinct from the body, this proves the changeless nature of the soul, distinct from body and senses. Baladeva Vibhushan expands on this by first restating the Mayavadi doubt, then refuting it. Where was this footnote 18? Ah, there it is. Atma is awareness only. How can you say that Atma is aware of something? Right? Means because if you're only awareness, how can you be aware of something? Right? That's the point. Why not? If you're aware, if you're awareness, why can't you be aware of something? But here they're restricting. No, the soul is, they're saying he's Brahman, he's, but no, he can only be awareness. But the, it's they got issues. They have issues. But we have to remember that this was designed by Shankaracharya to bewilder. It wasn't meant to actually create a state of liberation. It's meant to bewilder. So, one, you bewilder the Buddhists into thinking that, I mean, into accepting the Vedic culture, which they've rejected, right, the Vedic literatures, but maintaining the philosophy. And at the same time, so it's how you say?
Culture.
Yeah, then they gain the Vedic culture, the basis, so now they can take the next step going into Vaishnavism.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, footnote 18. The soul has been described above, Bhagavatam 11.3.38, as upalabdhi matra, pure consciousness. Mayavad philosophy insists that this transcendental nature disallows the separate presence of the knower, the knowledgeable objects, and the process of knowledge. The amazing thing is that its awareness means that you can, you know, be aware of whatever it is. But they're saying, no, pure awareness means you can't be aware of anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which doesn't make sense. You think pure awareness means you see things in a more proper light.
Everything.
Yeah, you see, but you see it in what it actually is, because then you see that this is the body made of the material elements, this is the jiva, you know, this is the desire of the jiva, therefore the material energy and through the modes of nature is carrying these things out. That would be the actual perception of the person situated in pure consciousness.
Yes.
Right? Rather than just saying, no, then you can't perceive anything because there's no one to perceive.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you're consciousness, then what does that mean? What are you conscious of? Why conscious? What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's just an adjusted Buddhism, because you're saying there's nothing. So they're trying to say there's nothing, but they're calling this nothing consciousness rather than just void.
Mm-hmm. So there has to be discrimination in order to actually see.
Yes, otherwise how do you... It must be knowledge, there must be vidya. But then they're saying that it's vidya comes from avidya.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right? Because this knowledge is knowledge of this world, but it actually comes from illusion.
Mm-hmm.
But then the illusion, and that the only reason that there's illusion is because one, you know, sees... Because the soul sees himself as, you know, individual. But then the problem is then, again, we have the problem, where does the illusion come from?
Mm-hmm.
Because the illusion is defined is created by the jiva, but it's the illusion that makes the jiva as an individual.
Yes.
So it's just when you get down to this part of that's why the acharyas work at this level.
Yes.
Because at this level, it doesn't make any sense. It has no standing.
Yeah.
You know, because in between, they might have nice arguments for things, and then it's just a matter of emotions and all this kind of stuff. Mm.
It appears that they're separating the quality of consciousness from the possessor of the quality, and even just the possessor doesn't even exist.
Yeah, because they're just saying it's just consciousness. But the point is if it's consciousness, what is it generated from? I mean, it's just consciousness. But the point is, but what does that mean? Conscious of what? You know, but if it's consciousness, then the point is then that's the second thing, because then there's existence. So you have existence and consciousness. But then the point is then they're going to have to get rid of ananda, as it was discussed before, that there can't actually be ananda. But they talk about it, the impetus for getting to that platform is brahmananda. But if there's ananda, that means then you have to have, what do you say? About witness, you know,
possessor
and or the perceiver and the perceived, for there to be ananda. So therefore, then they drop that idea, but then still they end up with two. But if you get rid of consciousness, it's only sat. But then, what's the point of eternity? What does that mean?
Yes.
So what's the basis of these things? You know. Yes, nothing.
So if there is nothing, then you can be and you're conscious, you can be conscious of what's going on.
Meaning what they'll be saying. No, but the thing is, but who's this you? Because there's only one consciousness that has no identity. So you wouldn't be able to be conscious of anything. That's why they say you can't be conscious of anything. Because there is no identity to be conscious. But then what does that mean? What is the advantage of consciousness? How would consciousness be an elevation? You know, it's just like the rock is existing. You know, there's no material desires, there's no anxiety, there's no... So in other words, what they're trying to obtain, the rock's already done. You know, it's already the perfect, you know, I say. Perfect mind body. You know. I think Prabhupada mentions they become stones. When they come back from Brahman, they become grass or stones.
For the devotees who are stepping on the
grass. Grass, or even the cracks in the sidewalks. As Prabhupada says, how does it get there? It comes in the rain.
Yeah.
You know, just one may doubt it, it's just like you have a pond. It's not connected with anything. There's no fish there.
Mm.
It's dry. Then the rains come, and then you see at the end of the rainy season, there's fish there.
Yeah.
Because they fall in the rain.
Yeah.
Small, very small.
Yeah.
Like that. So, like that, then they come as blades of grass. As devotees step on. Stepping on them is just insulting. It's not enough. You have to uproot them. As you're going down the street and pulling out the grass and the cracks of the
sidewalk. Doing them a favor, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I can move on.
Yeah. To a rock. At least the end of someone's garden, right?
Yeah, they can be situated there for a long time, I'm thinking.
I think so. I think you'll be a rock a long time.
So it's like seeing nothing.
The consciousness is so minimal. But they can. If they're live rocks, if you poke them with a pin, they'll move. Like that. That was what one, what do you call it?
Stop it.
These big scholar pujaris were saying, someone brought a rock, and he was saying, this is not Shaligram. And they were saying it is, because it's the same with rock. It's made of balsa, whatever you call it. It's one kind of mineral, and so it's the same kind of mineral. And he was saying no, because Shaligrams are alive, and if you poke it, it'll move. Right? But you don't want to poke a Shaligram. Mm-hmm. But there are living rocks, you can do the same thing. If he says this, he takes a pin and he pokes it, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't move, it doesn't feel anything. So it's not alive. So it can't be a Shaligram. Right.
Kind of a side thing, but a Shaligram, that's actually a jiva.
No, the Shaligram was directly.
but there's,
piece of the body,
so there's
the
no
Lord.
Jiva in it.
No, no. Okay. But there are rocks that have jivas inside.
So the two different
them, you know, like jewels, some of these jewels, these big jewels, they're got jivas inside. That's why they're so
mountains.
Goes so nuts
mountains,
about
isn't it.
Hmm?
Mountains also, isn't it?
Yeah, mountains. Wingless mountains.
Oh yeah, wings.
Okay. The awareness takes shelter of the Atma. The Upanishad says the Atma does not see. Right? But we see here in the Brihadaranyaka, he said you can't remove the seer's vision. Right? So in other words, what they're talking about here, the Atma does not see, means the eyes working, seeing, visualizing, that's not the Atma. The eyes are seeing. The Atma's not seeing. But then the Atma identifies with those eyes, so therefore he claims, I am seeing.
Yes.
Yes. Does that make sense? Yes. In deep sleep, it does not see, because the absence of objects to be seen, because of objects to be seen, or because of absence of objects to be seen, and not because it is not a seer, the rest is clear.
Yes.
Okay. Then the consciousness of the self, right? The rest is clear. It's not because it's not a seer, right? It's just there's nothing to see. So he says he does not see. Then we're talking about the deep sleep. He doesn't see at that point because there's nothing to see, but not that the seer isn't present.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, footnote 19. Where is footnote 19? Yes. Another renegade footnote. It's run off. It is in deep sleep, so it cannot be seen. Okay. When the conscious itself is in deep sleep, it is said that he doesn't see anything because there is nothing for him to see, not because there is no seer. The second argument Srila Jiva Goswami makes in this verse is based on the fact that it is the jiva who experiences the material troubles and tribulations and not the supersoul, although both are in the same body. The jiva has no control over his own bodily functions, breathing, sleeping, digestion, pumping blood, and is bound by the modes signified by wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. All these activities are maintained by the supersoul, who is free and independent of material bondage. The jiva can escape his unhappy material body and revive his natural condition as a reservoir of ecstatic love by turning his loving propensity to the supersoul. Okay, well here a reservoir means a small reservoir, not a big reservoir. In the next section, Srila Jiva Goswami summarizes these points, summary of text 55. In explaining the two Bhagavatam verses, 11.3, 38-39, four inferences were made to establish the nature of the jiva as distinct from the body and material world. Jiva Goswami repeats them here for the easy comprehension of the reader. Just thinking, an easy comprehension. We're trying to figure out what's he talking about.
What's going on?
Exactly. Like that. In summary, there are four arguments showing the difference between matter and spirit. Using the logic of positive, anvaya, and negative, vyatigrika, comparison, footnote 20. Positive means that when there is union between the soul and the body, the changes are perceived by the soul. The negative means that changes in the soul and changelessness in the body is never perceived. Right? It means the soul stays the same, the body changes. You don't see it the other way around. Right? The body staying the same and different soul.
That's a Jehovah's Witness, I think that's what they say. When you die, the soul dies and the body goes to heaven.
What's the point?
Yeah. Don't ask.
It means you work so hard taking care of this body, and then you die, and then the body goes to heaven. I mean, this is some exploitation is going on. This is unfair.
Someone's
got to complain about this one.
Yeah. don't see.
So that would be
balance.
Wild, huh? You know, you get up in the morning, the guy's been around for, you know, last couple hundred years, and, you know, get up and, you know, he's dealing a little different than he has been for the last, you know, so long time. He says, oh, new soul. Like, hey, who are you like that? You know?
Yeah, got rid of the old one. We're getting kind of boring.
Yeah.
So that's why they're called the Jehovah's Witness, because all they can do is witness what's going on.
Okay. Yeah. But no, but you're dead. So then, even then you don't witness. You know? No, you can just be happy knowing that your body went to heaven. Yes.
Well, you then. Hmm? And who are you then?
I'm not sure. Who is it that dies?
Who goes to heaven?
We can maybe check it. We'll Google it.
What?
We'll Google it.
We'll Google it, okay.
See what they have to say.
I know that they're into talking lions. But
yeah.
That's a big one for the kids.
We have talking lions.
What?
Yeah. We have talking lions.
They do more than that, even. They're singing it?
Oh, they're singing it. Yeah. And Prahlad Maharaj is the kid.
That's where they got it from.
Yeah, unless they got it from there. Yeah.
Sue them.
Yeah. Hey.
Good publicity.
That would be that would be really
good publicity.
Oh yeah, very big publicity. Hindus sue Jehovah's Witness
for the talking lion controversy.
Yeah. The first proceeds. The first. There are four arguments. Okay, positive and negative. The first proceeds from the distinction between what comes and goes, and what is the ultimate ground of both coming and going. Right, so the soul is that point. The second proceeds from the distinction between the seer and the seen. Comes and goes, and there's ultimate ground. Okay, there's the ground, and then you can see that there must be a distinction. The third proceeds from the distinction between the witness and the witnessed. According to the opinion of saintly authorities. And the fourth, which reawakens one to true happiness, proceeds from the distinction between being unhappy and being a reservoir of ecstatic love. The verses under discussion, Bhagavatam, were spoken by Sri Pipalayana. Srila Baladeva Vidibhushan summarizes the four proofs for the soul's eternal existence as follows. Because the body comes and goes, because the body is seen, because the body is witnessed, because the body is the seat of suffering, it can be concluded that the Atma remains, because it sees, because it is the witness, because it is the abode of prema. Step by step, it may be affirmed that the Atma exists. This can be expressed negatively as Vyatireka as well. Because you don't see it in the opposite. You know, that the body is the ecstatic one. You know, but then the point is, so the soul dies and then the body goes to heaven.
Yes.
Okay, but what body goes to heaven? The one that's there at the point when the soul dies?
That's why you got all these old people in heaven.
Who wants to pull that?
Yes.
And everybody need a wheelchair or a walker or something. So that means it would be a great advantage to die young.
Well, you'd be hanging out with all the old people.
Maybe not such an advantage. At least you could sit there and goof on everybody.
Yeah,
Jehovah's Witnesses, they don't celebrate birthdays either. It's against religion. So maybe that's why. It's nothing to celebrate.
Only death.
One year. Yeah, when you're older to having a more old body in heaven.
Okay.
They don't like parties.
I don't know.
I don't really like anything.
Maybe when they go there and they are getting old also after.
Maybe when they get there, it starts back the other way. So.
Yeah, maybe it switches. Yeah. It goes the other way.
Oh, well. No. Speculation.
Maharaj?
Yes.
And those four arguments, what's the difference between the seer and the witness?
Because there's an experience of it. Because remember before I could say I experienced it. You know. So the means you have the experience that means there is, means that individuality remains, means you're seeing, that means that you're cognizant, but then the witness means then there's the experience of. But I mean, they're basically the same, but you're just taking two sides of kind of the... Okay.
So,
you know, one is active and one is passive, but it's just based on the arguments that will be given by the other party.
One has thinking and feeling.
The argument for the seer and seen was the transformation of the body from youth to old age, and then the example for the witness was the sleep, the deep sleep, and the waking sleep.
Mm.
So, in one you awake, one you not.
So in other words, it's showing a different example.
Yeah.
One is that the body is changing, but the soul is remaining the same. But also that's the first one. Because the body comes and goes, so that means the body is coming, you know what I'm saying, is going through all these stages. So that, but the soul remains the same.
Okay,
because the body is seen, because he can perceive it. But because the body is witnessed, then, I don't know that example, because the body is the seat of suffering. Right, but the soul is looking for happiness. So that's the whole thing, but you don't see it the other way around. So positive or negative. So that means you have eight.
If we just bring out the idea of something that can be spoken about at a later date?
I think so, because then they were using the witness in the deep sleep element, because he has the memory. So he's conscious at the time and he has the memory.
Recalling the memory.
Yeah.
Experience at the time.
I think so, because he kind of, that both of them work, because yes, of course he's conscious, so he can see himself, and so at the same time as later is then he's the witness of it, you know. So the point is, the soul being self-illuminated, then you have both aspects. Okay. You find something more? Yes.
How is it possible that the jiva could identify with the super soul?
It's also an illusory element, because you already have to think that's you before him. See, if you understand that you're a servant of the Lord, you understand transcendence, then when you see the Lord, then you'll understand that he's the supreme transcendence. So you wouldn't make that mistake. So they have to start off with that premise in the first place. Otherwise, why would you make that mistake? Because the four Kumaras, it's all one. But because it's not about merging or that, it's just about the experience, they can see that you're superior. This is superior. So that's the point. So this other thing is actually a little...
Would say a yogi, in practice, by their practice, would the super soul wouldn't reveal himself to them?
They would see the super soul.
And then identify themselves.
But they identify that that's themselves. You know, that's, in other words, that's the supreme position of. Because, I mean, if you're looking at it from the impersonal point of view, is that when the Brahman is covered by illusion, right? You know, how that happens is another thing. And what part of Brahman? But when Brahman is covered by illusion, then there is. In this avidya, illusion, then you get knowledge and illusion. So the knowledge aspect, that creates Vishnu, the super soul. And the other aspect is the jiva, is the soul, but from the ignorance part. So then it would appear that they feel that they've elevated themselves to the point of goodness or knowledge, where now they're seeing themselves as that, but the ultimate point is that merging, like that. Or they see him as a person. They don't see that they are the super soul, but they want to merge into the body of the super soul, because then there's no material activity, so therefore they'll be happy. Does that make sense?
In our philosophy, will the super soul reveal himself to
the other? Means that they follow the Patanjali system for seeing the super soul, because for us, as we're always dealing with, even we're seeing super soul, we're dealing with Bhagavan. So it's the Lord and his devotees and all that. So, but they technically could see if they follow the system properly. But they won't actually, means upon seeing, they can either surrender in devotion or take up one of these impersonal elements. Think they are the super soul or they want to merge into the super soul. And of the two, think wanting to merge into the super soul is considered more, how you say, sad, because they actually perceive the difference between themselves and the Lord, and they saw the position of the Lord. They still want to merge rather than serve. Like that. So if they think that I am the Lord, then it's a lower level of consciousness to do it, but it's, they don't actually know about the higher. Is that? So the, technically they can, but they won't understand the super soul as such. But if they're going with that proper attitude, then seeing the super soul, then they take up devotional service. Like we see in the examples in the Bhagavatam of these great Prajapatis, that before having children, then they sit down and do their meditation. And then when they see the super soul, then they take up devotional service. So then that service they're doing as Prajapatis. Like that. So, only thing, they have to wait 60,000 years. Darshan. Therefore, we're a little bit more fortunate. No? Okay. It's 1:45, right? Oh, time's all right. Does that kind of work, or?
No, that goes on in knowledge aspect of the illusion.
Yeah, it means that's if they're thinking that they are the super soul. If they're thinking that they want to merge in the super soul, then they'll understand it as the supreme. But they are thinking that the ultimate position is that the jiva merges into. So now how much they consider that they become this and that, I'm not sure. Because in second chapter of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, they talk a lot about the super soul. So you could get the understanding that he is the Supreme Lord. But it's not necessarily that they maintain that, because in the last chapter, when he talks about meaning this position of samadhi, he doesn't mention the super soul there. I think it's just understood that it's supposed to be there, but one could also make the mistake and not. But he may have taken it as it should be automatically understood that that's what he's talking about. You know? But the point's been missed. Because we see is that there's yogis that come up to the standard, see the super soul, and then take up devotional service. And then there's ones who come to that position that don't. Like that. And then there's so many who never even get to that point, because it seems that before that complete samadhi comes, the yoga siddhis come. And so most seem to get distracted at that point, so they never even get to seeing the super soul.
Would it make sense in this connection to distinguish between seeing the super soul and the symptoms of the super soul?
Symptoms
mean? Yes, meaning that I'm not in this position doing all this, something else must be controlling.
I'm saying that would be more intelligent. So therefore, if you've come to the transcendental platform and you've experienced the super soul, then like the Kumaras, then you can see there's something beyond. Mm. Right, so therefore, the service of this person would be the supreme transcendental reality. Mm. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yes.
What is my right philosophy? What is the purpose of the result?
That there is, I don't know, just the element of goodness. So then, you know, what is the proper path? What is the proper knowledge? The proper sadhana? Proper knowledge?
Crutch.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a crutch. It's a crutch. So then, but it's the best crutch. It's the most, the topmost element of goodness. That's their idea. But ultimately, there is nothing. So that's why even those who worship Vishnu and say they're Vaishnavas, if this is their position, then they're not taken as actual Vaishnavas. Because it doesn't really come as much of a importance in our experience. But within the group of smartas, there are those who worship Vishnu identify themselves as Vaishnavas. But ultimately, they say that it's Brahman. I mean, I've met not so seriously practicing people. They weren't smartas, but they originally had that idea. They worship Lakshmi Narayan and all that, but ultimately there's nothing. Right? So it appears they're Vaishnavas. So they worship Ram, they worship Krishna. Devotees come. Yeah, they're very happy. They invite in the house. They have a shad. They do kirtan. They listen to the lectures. It all works really good. So it appears that they're devotees. Mm-hmm. So, but if they maintain the consciousness they had, they're technically not devotees. But if they switch to by the association of the devotees, they take up the proper understanding, then they become devotees. So you have your devotees, then you have you have these that look like. I'm not sure if what he uses. I think they're a reflection. They're like reflections of devotees. Because generally when we deal with Maya bodies, it's always reflections, not actually. There's that. Yeah. You know, so it's like before, you know, all these, as you travel around, all the Hindus and like that. Most of them are all, but if you ask them what's the supreme, most of them will say Brahman. And then there'll be those who'll say, you know, they wish it was Ram, it's Ram supreme, Krishna supreme. Like that, you do have the ones, those are actual. But they might not be sampradayic, so then there's a weakness there also. But there's more of a better understanding. But, you know, the point is, it's whatever it is, and they have to be sampradayic with this proper understanding. So. Yes?
What does it mean whenever an impersonalist will have difficulty doing an activity to gain a result?
An impersonalist will have a difficulty.
Yeah.
What do you mean by what does it mean?
Well, I would consider myself to be like an impersonalist. So then.
You would consider yourself to be an impersonalist.
Yeah, and then, so then it's difficult to.
Why? Because you refuse like other members of the community to give names to your potatoes. So you're an impersonalist.
But just to have this like upadhi, I mean, have this upadhi, so then it's difficult to perform activity to get results. It doesn't come natural, you know. It's like something that has to be, you know what I mean? Whereas other people are like, yeah.
The problem is I don't know what you mean. Anybody knows what you mean?
It means like some people, they have propensity for like just get down.
But I'm saying it's good because I remember back in the 60s, you just talk like this and go, you know what I mean? I mean, you know what I mean, man? You know what I mean, man? Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, I know what I mean. Yeah, you can have a whole conversation just saying that.
I'm sorry, guys.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, what I mean is that some people, they have propensity. It's like, let's just get down and get to work. And other people, they like to intellectualize and, you know, philosophy.
Okay.
So then, why would be what's the stoppage and what blocks the person?
What blocks means from being one or the other?
From the impersonalist side, you know, this gyan.
What blocks them from
performing practical service?
But when you say they just want to get down and do practical service, you're talking about devotees, or you're talking
That's the karma. This is the karma side becoming strong with the karma element in devotional service.
Oh, but you're saying the jnana element has a problem
in doing practical service.
But that means practical, meaning just having the skills to do it, or having the inclination to do it.
Inclination.
The inclination is just But you'd have to see what's the basis. It can be just being lazy, you know. That's also a possibility. Okay. So the other that comes up is that means for the impersonalist, there's the idea that activities and interaction, you know, all the different social interactions and endeavors that give results because they give pain. Therefore, you don't want to perform them. Like that, you know. But if you could perform them and not get pain, there's every chance they'd be doing it.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the Maya body wasn't the guy that was the life at the party. He was the nerd over in the corner that nobody paid any attention to. Right? So therefore, you know, he's already got a head start in being a Maya.
Running start.
Yeah. You know, he's saying, so there's two aspects. One is that, you know, whatever the results, you'd rather not make the endeavor for it.
Yes.
So that's ignorance. You know, that one, it makes an endeavor for it, one gets the result, one will be happy with that. You know, and that's passion. Or if one, it doesn't work out, one is unhappy with it. That's passion. Goodness is you do it because that's your duty, you're supposed to do it. Like that. But there's the thing is you don't like being involved so much materially. That's why pure goodness is the actual platform, because then you do it for Krishna. Pure goodness is the actual platform, because then there's no passion or ignorance, so you're actually doing it for Krishna. Because the mode of goodness, the tendency is to not want to be involved in anything that does generate trouble. Like that. For someone who's actually situated there. So they keep things very simple and, you know, kind of stay out of the way of things that can cause trouble. So that's okay for themselves personally. But when it comes to making endeavors for Krishna, then to do something nice then means going through those areas that create trouble. So someone in the mode of goodness might have a tendency to be wary of that. But that's goodness, right? Because it's still about their own pain that they'll gain from it. So there's still that touch of passion is there. It's not pure goodness. But pure goodness is whatever it takes to make Krishna happy, you'll do, even if it causes so much trouble. But it still has, it means, because it's pure goodness that has the element of, you know, performing the duties and knowledge and all those elements. So you just have to see within that what you're working with. And then decide. Is that something? We're trying to look up the second hand is right. No, it's there's time, and it says every time I look, it always.
Is intuition the super soul?
Is intuition the super soul? The point is intelligence is there, and intelligence has the memory, and so then there's so many of these elements that are there. It's just there's, you know, if you look at. There's some logical element there. One also has previous experience of these things. So it's not specifically that the super soul is telling you this and telling you that.
It's just intelligence.
Yeah, you're dealing with intelligence. But if it's something devotional and then you get some understanding of something you didn't know before, that's the super soul. If in trying to understand Krishna consciousness or apply Krishna consciousness, then you get realization. That's the super soul. That's he's giving blessings. But just, you know, about to walk in the door and then thinking, oh, did I leave my keys in the car? That's just intelligence, because then the memory is all going back and putting these things together.
Isn't there an element that the intelligence and mind are only functioning by the mercy and by the arrangement of the super soul?
That is there, but this aspect we want to be able to say is that, you know, super soul told me this, you know, so. Yeah, so those kind of things you want to stay away from.
Yeah.
You know, because the point is unless you're on the liberated platform, you're not directly seeing him that he's going to be sitting there and telling you.
Yeah.
But through the intelligence, he may reveal things.
Uh-huh.
Because he is controlling it all. That's there. So you have to be careful of mixing the facts with the sentiment. That's what you have to be very careful of. Uh-huh. That's what you want to.
Yeah.
It's a nice justification of whatever you're doing.
Yeah, it can be. It's not to go. Raise
the sword.
Yes, it's popular during the Crusades. God's will. This means, I'm bored. Let's go. Let's go, you know. Catch some Muslims here. It's God's will. Yes, it's how it is. It works out. Okay. Where were we? Okay. We just started 55. In explaining the two Bhagavatam verses, 11:338-39,
we did that.
Yeah. So where are we?
Mm-hmm.
Page 19.
We just did the positive and negative.
Okay. The above reasons fall under the category of positive analysis. Anvaya, the Vyatireka, negative logical inference is that since the body changes, the Atma does not change. The body cannot be the Purusharta. Another one, if the Atma did not exist, there would be no witness or seer of the body. In conclusion, the section analyzed the characteristics of the Jiva in order to give knowledge about the Supersoul in Brahman. This was all based on analysis of the individual's experience. Now Srila Jiva Goswami embarks on a new analysis based on the purpose of the universe. 3.3. Conclusion. Understanding the absolute truth by understanding Srimad Bhagavatam's 10 topics. 56 through 63. Summary of section 3.3. In previous sections, Srila Jiva Goswami investigated the conviction and spiritual experience of Sutta Goswami. Of Sutta Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami, and Srila Vyasadeva to determine the central subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He examined the matter based on the second verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which declares that the absolute reality is the subject matter. Vastavam atra vastu. To define that reality, he referred to the Varanti Tat Tattva Viras verse 1-11, which named the three aspects of the one non-dual consciousness, Advaya Jnana. Since knowledge of the Jiva forms the basis for understanding the absolute truth in all its features, Jiva Goswami then quoted two verses spoken by Pipalayana Rishi. The conclusion was that the Jiva is conscious and distinct from the material energy. Until now, the analysis has been from the Vyasti perspective, or from the individual's point of view. Now, Srila Jiva Goswami begins explaining Brahman from the aggregate or Samasti point of view, in terms of the 10 topics dealt with in the Mahapuranas. This Vyasti and Samasti, it's these two ways the intelligence works. Tell the difference and tell the sameness. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that it does two things. Just like the mind accepts and rejects. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's the fun part, is that that's all we're dealing with. The mind accepts and rejects. And the intelligence tells the difference in what's the commonality. Yeah. Right? And then based on... So, does that make sense? So, the mind accepts and rejects when information comes in. Then that's analyzed by the intelligence into what's common and what's different and categorized. You know, so you have options. And then the mind, based on the false ego, which has already been accepted, mm-hmm. now accepts or rejects which ones are to be done.
Yes.
That's the reasoning process. But it's so simple.
Yes.
You know, it's basically a binary.
It's a point here.
Yes. You know? Yes.
Or is it Chinti Beta Beta Papa? Then it's the same but different. Is both on at the same time happening?
Yeah, you could say. That's all these things. You know? Yeah.
So, yes.
Okay. So then, now the big hand is on the 12. Where would we be without nursery school?
Not
we'd
here.
We would have digital talks.
Oh, yeah. I'm still adjusting with that. Because if it's 3:59, it's still 3 o'clock. But in analog, it's 1 minute to 4, so there's hardly anything left. You know, that's the difference. Yes. Maybe that's why kids don't really worry about time.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Marge, do you recall when in two functions, the intelligence, the splitting and putting together, where that's listed? Because I just put that together right now when you mentioned that. I never knew that was the...
Yeah, well, Sahaja Maharaj mentioned in his book.
Yeah.
Percussion, but that's all it does.
Yeah.
It does those two functions, the mind does two functions.
Is that like third canto Bhagavatam or something? Do you happen to know?
I'm not sure. I kind of remember discussing it second canto.
Yeah.
But it may be. I mean, maybe it's coming up in the short term.
Okay.
Because they're discussing all those things very well.
Yeah.
But
because even while compiling this, I never put that together. That's really interesting.
Yeah, that's what it does. Yeah. So that's why, because you're making a logical presentation, so now you get the other side.
Right.
So how the Lord is different.
Uh-huh.
You know, and now we're going to show how everything is topics about the Lord. Right?
Yeah.
How these 10 topics are all about the Lord.
Right. Yeah.
We also asked your separated perception and samadhi, how everything works together.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because that's even where the term vyasadeva comes from. It means split. Cut the Veda.
Oh, vyasadeva. Mm.
Yeah.
Vyasadeva.
Oh, okay. Vyasa
Veda.
Okay. Vyasa means... Vyasa, I'm going to circle the Vyasa is the diameter.
So oh, yeah?
Vyasa Deva is when it comprehends the whole Vedas.
I'm sure it means all of it, because that's the thing is you have the root word, and then as it comes up through the grammar, it starts making all these other roots. And then depending whether you have a noun or a verb or this or that, then it has.
Yeah.
Even sometimes the same noun can come from two different verbs, you get two
different meanings. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just whether it's a transformation of one or real noise.
The other another connection that came up was there's Samashti Paramatma and Vyakti Paramatma. One is Gaudiya Vishnu, the other is Kshirodakshari Vishnu.
Okay, so then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu.
He's Samashti Paramatma. He's the Paramatma of the entire universe.
Okay.
And then Kshirodakshaya Vishnu was the one who reflects into.
Oh, okay. It's for all the for all the. Oh, he's Vyasti. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it mentions both Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Kshirodakshaya Vishnu are the super soul.
Yeah.
They're also, I mean, more it mentions that they're both the universal form.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there's the two aspects of it, the overall and then how it's running. Yeah, because it's it means there's the attraction to it is why you're doing it, but at the same time it's the necessity is why you're making the endeavor.
Yeah, well, then prayojana.
Yeah, so yeah, because you're prajumna and anyurva.
Yeah. Okay. And about the Sutra Swami, I don't know if there was anything in the Vedanta psychology when I quoted it. I don't know, you looked at me for some reason, so I thought maybe.
No. Page 100, I was just thinking. It's, you know, it's like, I say, you know, psychology 101.
Okay.
You know, like that. 101. Yeah. You know, this is where it starts.